We knew we were going to be recording an episode today, one way or another, and I think I can say this is the much preferred episode to be recording. Much preferred.
I'm much more okay with it.
I am very much good with it. Very much good.
Woo. How do you even come back from a game like that? I barely slept last night.
That was the thing. It went so long. How did anybody sleep?
I don't know, man. I just kept watching the post game show over and over again. That it kept repeating.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that I was changing back and forth between ESPN and MLB Network because I figured ESPN, being the rights holder, they would have the dudes right after the game. MLB Network, I figured, eventually they'd do ballpark cam, whatever. Pretty sure every time I changed the channel, I missed the interview on the other network that I had left.
Yeah, and it was just talking about the Cubs the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
That happened to me three times. I kept trying to find post-game coverage, and it was talking about the Cubs or interviewing with Madden or something.
In fact, there was a headline on the Reddit MLB r/baseball today that asked, quote, "Why is the top headline on ESPN about the Cubs dealing with losing and not about the Rockies winning? As a small market fan, (parentheses) Twins, this just irks me. Go Rockies." We'll talk about that a little bit as the day goes along. But that's not the story. There's plenty of time to bitch about the Chicago Cubs getting all the attention from last night. Because you know why they're getting attention? Because they lost.
Because they lost.
The Rockies
at home.
On to the National League Division Series. And with that, we welcome you in to the second episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast in 30 hours.
I cannot wait for our paychecks this week. I'm Anthony Masterson. This is going to be
it's going to be terrific. We're going to get so much money for this overtime.
Working overtime.
Working overtime. That's not a song.
That's working 9 to 5. Getting that overtime.
Living, working overtime. They should update that song because it's not like anybody makes a living on a 9 to 5 anymore. What world is this? This is 2018 America.
Or anybody gets paid for working overtime.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, your Mayan hour. Colorado Rockies are on to the National League Division Series. The Rockies will take on the Milwaukee Brewers starting Thursday afternoon at Miller Park in Milwaukee.
FS1.
What will be a very fun matchup on FS1, the employer of one of us. And it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a good one. The Brewers, as hot as any team going into the postseason, I think the other team that can make that claim, probably the Colorado Rockies. The Saturday game against Washington and the tiebreaker game against the Dodgers notwithstanding, the Rockies have now won 10 of their last 12 games.
Yep.
And that is exactly what they needed to do. They did it, man. They did it.
I mean... We were talking yesterday about how we just literally couldn't even picture how the team would win the game last night.
Yeah.
I mean, third city, third time zone, third game in 3 days after the brutal loss you had on Monday in L.A., to have to fly across half the country to land in Chicago. Trevor Story said they got in around 2 a.m. That day. And to come out and then play a 5-hour game at Wrigley Field, a place where historically you don't play that well, save for the last couple of years, against a very hostile crowd, as Wrigley Field is always want to be. And you came in and you gave up one run in 13 innings, and your third catcher was the hero offensively. I mean,
yeah,
you score a run on your first out. And then don't score a run again until 12 innings later.
Good God. Unbelievable.
I mean, Tony Wolters was 0-for-15 dating back to September 10th. He had gotten zero base hits.
Zero hits in nearly a month. Almost a month. We'll dive into kind of the granular elements of this game, but I said this on the MILB podcast earlier today. Admittedly, I'm a sucker for the romance of baseball. I'm somebody who tweeted yesterday that the playball.org commercial that starts, here's the thing about this game, in which they say, you know, it doesn't matter your skin color, your gender, your height, your size, whatever, you can still play. And last night, if that's not the most emblematic moment of baseball, I don't know what is. You know, if it's basketball, you're looking for LeBron down the stretch. You're looking for Michael Jordan down the stretch. You're looking for Kobe down the stretch.
Yeah.
If it's football, all the focus is on your quarterback in the final drive. If it's baseball, you can be a glove-first, converted middle infield catcher, rule 5 pick, who can't bat his own weight, who hasn't recorded a hit in almost a month, and one swing of the bat, and you're in the history books forever.
Yeah.
And that is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, that's why baseball is the best sport.
Yeah, it's the great equalizer. You know?
It's for underdogs. It's
for guys like Terrence Gore. For guys, yeah. You know, Terrence Gore is a guy who has one skill set that is so much better than any other human being on the planet at that skill set that he has more stolen bases than he has plate appearances in his career.
He literally can't hit. Like he actually physically can't get on base. Like,
one hit in his entire professional life as a major leaguer.
And then
Terrence Gore was a 20th round pick back in 2011 in the Major League Baseball Junior. Terrence Gore in his career has one hit in only 19 plate appearances in 63 games as a major leaguer.
And yet
he's got 27 stolen bases.
He has been such a postseason performer. People know who Terrence Gore is, and the dude has one literal hit in the big leagues.
Amazing.
Because he's done it on such the biggest stage. In that 2014 run for the Royals, he stole some big bases there. 2015, same. Like, and then last night, stole a base. And when he came in the game, it was against Adam Ottavino, who does not hold runners. So many people today were saying, I can't believe Ottavino didn't hold him on. Ottavino hasn't held on a runner in like 3 years. That's not what he doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Because usually doesn't allow runners on base.
He's usually not dealing with runners.
That's the thing. So like he knows that if he does his job, the guy's going to strike out at home plate.
Right.
And so when he came in, I tweeted out, Gore's going to steal second. He's probably going to steal third. Ottavino has one job, and that's to retire Javier Baez.
Yeah.
And he made two brilliant pitches, got him down 0-2, and then inexplicably threw a slider that was over the outside corner of the plate. It wasn't a terrible pitch, but the way Javi Baez had swung at the previous pitch on a breaking ball in the left-handed batter's box, that's all you have to do with Javi Baez is throw it out of the strike zone far and away, and he will swing at it.
It's the worst chase rate in baseball, basically.
Yeah, and Adam had the – it was not Adam Ottavino's finest moment, but, you know.
Which, that's going to happen. I mean, that's baseball, too. Adam Ottavino had gotten 36 previous batters to 0-2 counts and had not allowed a hit to any of them. They were 0-36 before that hit last night, and Javi Baez ties the game. And that's, you know, as cliche as it is to say, that's baseball. And the thing that's so nuts about it is that was one of, like, a bajillion weird moments last night. You know, like, that was a game that has everything. And Sam Dykstra and I were talking about this on the Minor League Baseball podcast today. Like, the wild card game... You know, I know there was the tweet last night of like, baseball says our sample size is unassailable and it's the longest season of the year. You play
Matt
six
Ufford,
games, play every day for Matt Ufford. And then also baseball, the wild card game, bring the heat or go home, bitch. Which is pretty much true. But Sam had a really good point. The wild card game was created because wild card teams should not have it as easy as division winning teams in the postseason.
Right. It rewards winning your division because that is harder to do.
And we were on such a roll in Major League Baseball of the wild card team just crushing its way through the postseason and beating division champs because wild card teams were playing, you know, more stressful playoff-like games for the final 2-3 weeks of the regular season. Sometimes division champs are running away with it. They're going through the motions by the end of the year. So we were seeing all these wild card teams get put on even footing with division champions. And all of a sudden, you find wild card teams in the World Series left and right. So the wild card game was created because it should be more difficult for a wild card team to make it through to the division series. And when you think about it in that context, like, yeah, Chicago Cubs had a great season. Do they deserve to be going home right now? Probably not. But you didn't win your division. That's what happens.
No. Yeah, and you had a chance, too. You had a home tiebreaker game against the Brewers. And if you win that game, you win the division, and you're not worrying about
this. And you're just waiting around. You get to rest until Thursday.
And you didn't. And you didn't win it. That's why you're out now if you're the Cubs. It sucks, but that's why the wild card game is there. And if you win it, you got a good chance to keep going on because you're used to winning and you're just kind of using your adrenaline and going forward. That's what the Rockies have been doing. Like, everyone talked about the Cubs playing so many games in so many days. The Rockies just played their third game in three time zones in 3 days. Everyone's running on adrenaline there, and you can tell that both teams were really struggling offensively, but the Rockies got the big hit when they needed it, and the Cubs didn't.
Honestly, I think this stacks up very well for the Rockies going into tomorrow, the fact that they are staying on the road, not coming home to Coors Field, and it is literally the shortest road trip in Major League Baseball, basically.
Basically,
two cities, not like an intercity or
not like the Bronx to Queens. Right. Yeah.
Which,
it's really not
15 minutes
far.
Between Chicago and Milwaukee might be shorter sometimes than between the Bronx and Queens. But for the Rockies, I like that. We'll set that aside and we'll talk about that when we preview the National League Division Series. But let's go back to last night and just talk about some of the elements of this game and how weird it was. And a friend of the podcast, Manny Randhawa from MLB.com, put together a great story, which is up on Rockies.com right now and on MLB.com as well, which is it chronicles the weirdest moments in last night's game, and it goes chronologically. And it starts with the first inning when DJ LeMahieu blasts that ball out to left center field and it disappears in the ivy. This is something that we talked about yesterday. I get that there is the romance of the lights at Wrigley Field, and I actually did not realize this. I suppose had I thought about it, I probably could have realized it, but Eduardo Perez said yesterday it's the only ballpark in baseball in which there are no lights behind the outfielders,
which is why it's always seems so dark.
Yeah, which is why in center field you can't see a damn thing going on. So like, that's one trash element. The ivy, man, it's 2018. Do we need to be playing with vegetation that swallows up baseballs in the ivy? Trim the ivy back enough that it still looks like ivy, but that baseballs don't literally disappear into it?
Yeah, there are many things, and that's, again, that is part of baseball's charm as well,
is that
you know, every stadium is not alike. You know, in football, basketball, hockey, you know, you have your arenas, but they have their quirks and whatever, but when you get inside the lines, everything has to be the same. Everything is standard, and that's not the case in baseball. So I get that it's okay that baseball does that because that's what makes baseball charming and fun and interesting. But, you know, take away the history. We said this before. Take away the history. Fenway and Wrigley are the two shittiest parks in all of baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, they're garbage.
They're place
from a
to
different
attend.
Era. They're from an era when the average American was 5'4" and 140 pounds.
Well, and you're building literally just into whatever space you had in your neighborhood,
which is awesome. You know,
that's great.
I mean,
awesome.
So cool when you look at it from a historical perspective. But like,
that's why I said take away the history. The fan experience at Wrigley or Fenway is awful. Like, if there's obstructed views, the seats are uncomfortable. You know, It's tough. It's a tough place. And I'm glad, though, I don't have to go there again this year. I'm very, very excited for that.
So, you know, that's the first weird moment. You could kind of tell, this has the potential to be a strange night. It ends up not really costing the Rockies. I mean, in that circumstance, you know, Charlie Blackmon ends up scoring in the inning anyway. I still think that he should have been awarded home because he was moving on the pitch.
Right.
So, seemed like he should have been assumed to be at second base when that ball disappeared. You know, he's almost all the way to third by the time it actually was in the ivy and Chris Bryant threw his hands up, but neither here nor there. The Rockies end up getting a run in the first inning, and then they go scoreless until the 13th, and all the weird shit that happened in between was just like, what? Manny's next one, the sixth inning, David Dahl's season has been fantastic. I feel like he's finally arrived as a major leaguer. As long as he stays healthy, I think David Dahl is your everyday center fielder.
His defense has been a little bit suspect at times this year, let's just say. I don't know what you're going to say. Yeah.
Now, I will say, I know that ball last night had a 90% catch probability. I think that's a more difficult play than people are giving it credit.
He was shaded to right center. He had to run a long way.
He ran a long way.
That is the issue.
In a ballpark where you're not used to the dimensions, there's not a whole lot of foul ground down that line. And if you're David Dahl, you know, I mean, granted, he went 150% and ended up making that play at Dodger Stadium near the short wall where he ended up going into the seats on Monday. But like David Dahl, you have to think is hyper cognizant of his health. So if I'm David Dahl, I would probably get a little bit mindful of the fact that I may be running full speed into a literal brick wall down the right field line. Not only that, but you're dealing with, obviously, the elements at Wrigley Field are well spoken for. The wind plays very differently down the right field line versus what it would be in center field versus what it would be in left. That was not an easy play. And I think, you know, the hit probability, the catch probability, I'm not sure how much that takes into account factors like wind, for example, but the wind did seem to play a factor last night from what we were hearing. That was not a, it was a play that should have been made, granted.
Sure.
But it wasn't, and you really kind of felt like, oh man, here it goes.
Yeah,
you
know, here it comes. Yeah, floodgates are open.
That was the moment. Chris Bryant was given a single, by the way.
I mean,
you have to by the rules, I guess, of scoring baseball.
Yeah,
but, you know, baseball scoring is dumb and weird. Yeah. So that puts runners at first and second with one out in a 1-0 game.
Facing Anthony Rizzo.
And Anthony Rizzo goes first pitch swinging and grounds into an inning-ending double play.
Yeah.
Like, what? What are you doing, man?
Oh, it's the same thing that Dahl had later in the game.
Exactly.
The Rockies got the bases loaded.
Right.
And Dahl swung at the first pitch and hit a weak grounder to the first base. And
got
the inning
bases
was
loaded off of a weird play in its own right.
Right.
Somebody, guess who, hits a weak ground ball to the left side. Chris Bryant doesn't hustle to throw to second base because presumably, like any normal third baseman would think, Chris Bryant thought, this is routine. I'll get this guy by three steps. Gerardo Parra, busting his ass, slides in, makes it in safely on a routine grounder to the left side, loads the bases. Wrigley Field is like a funeral home. And then David Dahl goes first pitch swinging and grounds out. Like, what? What happened here? So that's a little later. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
The seventh inning, you really felt like it was, again, gonna go by the wayside. Bottom of the seventh, first and second, two outs. Former Coastal Carolina Chanticleer Tommy La Stella at the
plate. Oh, the Chanticleers.
Well, hey there, delightful Tommy La Stella.
Hey there, delightful Tommy La Stella.
Swings and bounces a ball that turns into what looks like the final out of the inning. But no. And I was proud of myself because I felt instantly like it was catcher's interference. I didn't see the glove fly off.
You heard the umpire screaming interference. You heard right away.
I didn't hear that, but I did hear weird contact, and immediately Tommy La Stella turned around and started pointing.
Yeah.
And hitters are not that emphatic when they're trying to fake it. You can't fake a reaction like that. And so
like Terrence Gore tried later. We'll get to that.
Right. And we'll get to that too. But I initially, even when Desmond tagged the bag and everybody's freaking out and they're saying that the Rockies have gotten out of the inning, I was like, no, this is not going to go this way.
Yeah.
And then they immediately put La Stella on. Drew Butera is in the game in that spot. And I know Rockies Twitter, we were all freaking out. What did you think about the move to put Drew Butera? Drew Butera has been on this team for like a month. And Drew Butera all of a sudden is the guy that you go to in that circumstance?
Drew Butera is going to be a sporkle quiz for the Rockies 25-man roster for the wild card game. You're not going to remember that guy was on that team like Ryan Hannigan last year.
Yeah. Pyan Rannigan.
So Drew Butera, in theory, is on this team, and they acquired him because he's got a great rapport with Wade Davis, of course. They play together in Kansas City. He has caught the last out of a World Series back in 2015. Good for him. He's not much of a hitter, but he's supposedly a calming veteran presence back there behind the plate. And considering they got him there for big games and his experience in big games, he comes in and immediately, as you said on Twitter, I believe, vomits all over himself in a play that you rarely ever see, especially in the postseason, with someone not named Jacoby Ellsbury is at the plate. So you're carrying three catchers on that roster.
Yeah.
On a wild card game roster, I'm sure it's going to be very, very similar again as we go forward in the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same difference that we see come tomorrow morning. You've done it all year. You're not. Why would you stop now? It's hard to play the hindsight game. I don't like doing that because you can't say that it was a bad decision right away to put in Butera because he's not a bad defensive catcher, obviously, but like it was interesting, but Bud Black had some very interesting moves last night. I'm sure some of those are going to come later in this article as well.
So that moment looked like it was going to ruin everything. Drew Butera signs with the Rockies on September 1st, and then all of a sudden, or is acquired by the Rockets.
Acquired, yeah.
In the waiver deadline deal. Or was, no, he was a
waiver deadline. No, he was a waiver. He was a waiver deadline. I thought he was August 31st, no?
So yeah, it was the August 31st. Man, that feels like it was not that long ago.
It was just over a month ago, yeah.
It feels like it was 20 minutes ago. So anyway, the Rockies recently acquired catcher, Mixes catcher's interference moment, and it feels like, well, now it's all going to swing away from the Rockies. And Tommy LaStella, by the way, I thought it was interesting. Jason Benetti, who was fantastic last
night. He's one of the best in the game. Yeah.
He's so great. The Chicago White Sox regular play-by-play guy who was on last night on the ESPN2 StatCast broadcast. Jason Benetti said, this is something that we see from Tommy LaStella, and you mentioned it with Jacoby Ellsbury too. That almost is a skill set that certain guys have. And to be able to have not only the awareness, but the bat control to maybe make that happen and drag the bat head through the zone long enough to create catcher's interference, that blows my mind.
It's hard. It's a hard skill set to have because you just think about it and you're like, oh, he just hit the catcher's glove and it's so easy. Nah, man. Like it's hard to do it.
You can't deliberately hit the catcher's glove. You can't just
it's hard to do it and make it look accidental. That's why whatever the major league leader of all time is Ellsbury, who only has he's done it 30 times in his career. Yeah. Like Pete Rose was the leader forever. And Pete Rose was a guy who always knew how to, find a way to get by, I should say. He was very good at that. And Jacoby Ellsbury is a very similar way. Like he was able to, if he starts his bat slowly, fine, bring it around and sees a catcher reaching for it, just gets really back in the box. That's an easy way to get to first base.
Yeah. Yeah. So it appears, that it's not going to be a fun seventh inning, just as it appeared that it was not going to be a fun sixth inning. And then Jason Hayward strikes out. You and I both saw Jason Hayward early on in his professional career.
Yes.
He was with the Myrtle Beach Pelicans in my first season there in 2009 when you were with the Potomac Nationals. And people talked about Jason Hayward the way they would talk about Mike Trout. Jason Hayward was billed as the next big thing in baseball. And especially
for the Braves. For the Braves too. A local kid coming up through those ranks and then coming up in his first at bat in the big leagues, hits a home run off Carlos Zambrano.
First at bat, it was.
It was a first at bat, right? Yeah, that's what I thought.
And that season in 2010, I mean, it sure as hell looked like he was going to be the guy. He goes out, bats 277, 393, 456, and 849 OPS, 18 homers, 72 RBIs. Did put together a decent 2012 as well, a pretty good 2012, and won a gold glove that year. And, Jason Hayward has won 5 gold gloves. He's done some good things in his career.
Good
but
for him.
It stuns me how mediocre of a player he's turned into. When you saw him play when he was 19 years old, you thought, this dude has perennial all-star written all over him. And he is he's just a guy out there.
Well, at least he's rich.
Yeah, he is. He is very much rich. Yeah. And Nate Kregman said, we were texting about it the other day, and he said, but he made that speech in the weight room during the rain delay in game 7, and that's worth every penny.
Yeah.
So there in the 7th, that was just play number 3, by the way. I think we've got 6 plays to get through in this bizarre-ass game. 8th inning. Javier Baez, we already discussed this a little bit, pinch runner Terrence Gore, and that's what we're going to discuss here in a second. Terrence Gore steals second against Adam Ottavino. Otto gets out 0-2, then leaves the slider just enough over the plate that Baez laces it for a game-tying double to left center field, but is able to get out of the jam, keep things tied at 1-1. Here's the question that I have for you.
Sure.
In that moment, and I got a text from a friend of mine who's a scout who said, congratulations, you just removed an MVP caliber player from an elimination game. Terrence Gore ended up getting 2 extra innings at bats in a winner-take-all playoff game while Anthony Rizzo was burned for the night.
Right, because Rizzo had the base hit, Gore pinch ran for Rizzo. Yes.
Right. Granted, maybe the inning goes differently. Maybe the Cubs don't score, and maybe this turns into a 1-0 win for the Rockies in 9 innings. That's entirely possible. Terrence Gore steals the base. I mean, Terrence Gore could have scored. Had Terrence Gore been the one hitting the ball that Baez hit, I think he probably still scores because Terrence Gore has the baseball scouting scale goes to 80, and Terrence Gore's speed is 190.
Right. Right.
But so maybe they don't score that inning. But the fact that Anthony Rizzo sat on the bench for the final five innings of that game last night because Joe Maddoned this game. If I'm a Cubs fan, I don't know if I am mad about that move, but I certainly am thinking about that move today.
Well, I mean, if you're a Rockies fan, you have the exact same reaction to Bud Black taking out Charlie Blackmon in a very similar situation, yeah, in a double switch. Charlie Blackmon sat and watched the final five innings from the bench as well. Now, like, you have to say that for Joe Maddon's sake, the fact that he put in Gore, it worked. They scored a run. Yeah. They don't score that run if Anthony Rizzo is running.
Yeah.
And so it's a 1-0. Yeah. If they don't score that run, it's a 1-0 loss in nine innings.
Yeah.
So did you say that Maddon screwed that up there? It's hard because the move worked in a short-term sense. In a long-term sense, since the game went 13 innings, no, clearly it did not work, and what an idiot, and you know, what's Joe Maddon doing, blah, blah, blah. I think taking out Charlie Blackmon was a much weirder move by Bud Black. And I was very surprised what happened. I'm still very surprised that it went down. And it's going to be overlooked because the Rockies won the game, but I wonder how that thought process went for Bud. And I don't know if this is the next thing you want to talk about in the article, but we can get into this now because for Joe Maddon, I think the move worked. It didn't work going forward because the game went on, but they got the run when they needed it and were able to live for a few more innings. They couldn't get another run after that. Sucks for them. When this year, in any game, close, long, whatever, when has Bud Black ever taken out Charlie Blackmon?
Yeah, that is true.
And that listen, there's a lot of data that suggests that in a close game, you want your best, if you have the lead, you want your best outfield out there. And so you put in Gerardo Parra to pair along with David Dahl and Carlos Gonzalez. That's probably your better outfield. Charlie Blackmon has had a roughly graded season in center field, and you watch him and he's not right. You know, we've said it all year. He's been dealing with a quad injury that suffered early in the season that's been hampering him all year. He doesn't look like the same guy that we've seen the last few years. And that's
what he's an athlete on the wrong side of 40 too. You know,
exactly. I mean, and he's been playing through pain. He made a couple of nice plays last night in the outfield, which was great. There's an argument to be made if you're doing it to put your best outfield there in a close game, and it's late innings and you're trying to win that with your best outfield defense. There's an argument to be made there. He took Charlie Blackmon out, and I was still shocked. And they didn't really address it much on the broadcast because I'm not sure they would know one way or the other. But you're taking out, by the way, an MVP level type of player. We've seen Charlie Blackmon play like an MVP in his career. Defensively, not so much. Offensively, yes. I've never seen Bud Black take Charlie Blackmon out for a defensive replacement. And I've never seen it. And even after, if you would have like butchered a couple of balls out there in center field, I might be like, okay, you know, maybe it's just not Chuck's day. Yeah. There was the one play on a Almora hit where it looked like he might have been able to come and make a diving catch or something like that. But at the same time,
that was the play that Eduardo Perez made the note. If you're a visiting outfielder, it's very difficult to read balls at Wrigley Field because there are no lights behind you.
And at the same time, it's a one run game. If Chuck dives for that ball and it's behind him, Almora may score.
Yeah, that's true.
So I didn't mind him playing that ball on a hop if he wasn't positive he could get it, because that was a dead ball hit right at him, dead center field. If he misses it, the Rockies are screwed. Yeah. So they lived to fight another game, another inning. They got out of that. It ended up being okay. What are your thoughts on Charlie Blackmon being taken out? Because I'm still not sure Bud's thought process there. And I don't know if anybody's asked him about it. I have not seen anything today. I didn't really go scouring the internet for it. But it seems strange. No, I mean, that's one of your three best players, especially your hitters.
And
you know, I know you had a lead late, but at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, like, that hasn't been a normal thing all season long. And that's what screws me up about it.
Yeah, that is, like, it did kind of smack of a desperation move because you haven't done it all year. I don't think the Rockies. There cannot possibly be a plan that Charlie Blackmon is your long-term solution in center field.
No, and, but this is 2018. We're here right now. He's right, your center right. fielder.
But what I'm saying
for the next 15 games, hopefully.
You started a less than ideal outfield in which your best center fielder was in right field to start the game.
Sure.
David Dahl, I mean, if you're going to get into a certain, this is a point I'm trying to drive at. If you're going to get to a circumstance where you're admitting that Charlie Blackmon is not your best center fielder, why are you starting him in center field anymore?
Correct.
Move him over to a corner now.
Yes.
If David Dahl is the guy you want in there in the biggest moments, why not just start putting David Dahl there? Now, granted, it's a postseason. You don't want to change things up. I get it. But that's what felt so strange about it. This is a move that we've never seen.
No.
And for that to have been, and it ends up not biting the Rockies, but like the Rockies ended up with 11 hits yesterday, which is mind boggling because it felt like they had two.
Right.
But you know, Charlie Blackmon had one. Walked once, scored the game's first run, which was the only run forever. It just felt weird because it was so unusual for this team.
Right. And that's what I wanted to find out what his thought process was. I really have no clue.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's going to be a thing going forward as we talk about the NLDS going forward. But, man, it's – I don't know. I really have no idea what to make of it right now because it could have been an aberration, could have been a, hey, this is a winner-take-all game. We got to pull out all the stops no matter what kind of situation for Bud Black. Yeah. And I understand that. By the way, Bud Black got his first ever postseason victory last night in his 11th year as a manager. That's awesome.
Bud Black. That's pretty sweet. That is pretty sweet. So that'll be interesting to observe that as the playoffs go along. I don't know. I'm sure we'll talk about that more.
Yep.
And then we came to the play in the 11th inning. Javi Baez walks, goes to second on a sacrifice bunt by Albert Almora Jr. Looked for a second like the Rockies were going to have a chance to hang Baez up between second and third because he rounded the bag when no one was at third. And Drew Butera, thankfully, made up a little bit for the catcher's interference by covering the third base bag after Nolan made the throw to first to get the out there. So Baez is at second base. Rockies intentionally walk Daniel Murphy. Which, by the way, how great was it to see Daniel Murphy do absolutely nothing yesterday? 0-for-4, walk, strikeout, looked terrified to be playing first base. That's too bad.
The tweet that you made was one of the funnier things I've ever seen you do.
I won't say who it was from. I will say I can't take credit for the tweet.
But it was so good.
It was good. Wilson Contreras then, with one out, runners at first and second, hits a grounder to third base. Nolan Arenado fields it and goes to tag Javi Baez, who is coming toward him at the third base bag. And the two end up hugging, and there's one out recorded.
And I said on Twitter that it ended up being not a big deal. They got out of the inning. It wasn't a thing afterwards. If the Cubs would have scored that inning and won that game, it was all anybody would have talked about. Because it's a live play.
Yeah.
And it's not like Baez was running into a base and popping up and needed to brace himself on Nolan or something like that. He got caught in a rundown. And, you know, Javier Baez is a flashy, flamboyant kind of guy. He went up and just kind of put his arms around Nolan and said, hey, man, I'm out. I get it.
Yeah.
No. Nolan did not try to pull away and make some other play. I don't think he would have had another play at a base if he would have tried. But that's neither here nor there because it's interference. He had the play. He had the ball in his glove. He was tagging Baez. Baez literally wrapped him up and put him in a bro hug. And that was only the second out. There was still a runner at first and a runner at second. If Nolan would have tried to pull away, he could have probably gotten the interference call and that's fine. But Nolan did not try, and that's why nothing came of it. Bud Black came out to argue there's nothing really the umpires could have done at that point. And listen, it's cute now. We can appreciate it now because it didn't end up being the game.
Yeah.
And it would have been a lot cuter if it was a Friday afternoon and both teams had dinner reservations, and it was the middle of August, and nobody cared. It would have been hilarious then. It would have been on the blooper reel at the end of the year.
Hey man, I'll be honest. I loved it. I thought. Oh, no.
Now that it didn't cost the Rockies anything.
Yeah.
Now it's wonderful. If that inning, if the next batter would have hit a bloop single over the head of Trevor Story and the Cubs would have won that game, I think I would have rioted inside my own home.
Yeah. This is the thing. I think in watching the play, and by the way, I totally forgot that was the outcome of that weird at bat in which Wilson Contreras felt something in his right knee.
And then for five minutes, they
just let that go on. Whether or not the Cubs were going to take him out, it was going to be a pinch hitter, whatever was going to happen, the umpires just let that go on, which, you know, I get it. Like, it's an injury situation. There's no clock on it. But that's if you're the Rockies, you've got a pitcher out there who's getting cold, waiting to figure out what's going to happen with this batter.
It sure
and then all of a sudden,
like
Wilson Contreras.
Yeah.
So we'll talk more about gamesmanship here in a little bit. Now, here's the thing, and I will fully admit – I am not positive if this is the rule that applies, but Major League Baseball's rule book 6.01A5 says, quote, any batter or runner who has just been put out or any runner who has just scored hinders or impedes any following play made on a runner. Such runner shall be called out for the interference of his teammate. That does not say that the fielder has to make an attempt to get the out. And that was everybody's point was, right. Oh, man, well, Nolan's got to make the attempt there. He's got to follow the playthrough. That rule doesn't say that he has to follow the playthrough. Now, granted, maybe there is a subsequent rule. There's something additional to this that supplements that and says that you have to do that. But that's not what that rule says. So in theory, here's my interpretation. Nolan gave up on the play knowing that he wasn't going to be able to get an out anywhere else, gave into the moment and embraced Abby Baez, felt the sensitivity of that moment, which, by the way, Javi Baez is so fun.
Yes.
He's so much fun. I love that dude. And that moment, like that to me, I tweeted this immediately after it happened. That's going to be my favorite moment of the 2018 baseball season. Like that, just Javi, the fact that Javi Baez went in arms out already, it felt like internally laughing, like I'm gonna bear hug you right now. Like that, I loved that moment. And the thing is, I don't think it cost the Rockies because I don't think there's any opportunity to get an out anywhere else. And I think Nolan's body language, because he gets up, goes to tag Baez. And as soon as he does, even had Baez immediately tried to get out of the way, how his momentum is carrying him, he's kind of backing away from Nolan. I don't think Nolan can get away and make a throw and do anything in that time. And Baez is not intentionally impeding him. He's in the base path. He's trying to get to the bag. I don't think there's anything there that can be called. However, by the rule, maybe that does suggest that it should have been called. But I think the Rockies were disserved by two things. Number one, I think Nolan, you know, in that spot, like any human being would, realized he probably wasn't going to get a second out and just had this funny moment. And number two, Bud Black, I think, took a little bit too long to come out to argue that. I think if Bud Black
It's such a weird play. You're like,
exactly. Like,
what the hell
just
happened?
Seen that before. Nobody's ever seen that before. I love Dane Perry from CBS Sports tweeted right after it happened. Yeah, you can't do that.
I mean,
which was great. Yeah, like, and then at the end of the inning, tweeted, "Okay, it ended up not affecting anything. Please, everyone, join me in standing down."
Yeah, that's all. That's my whole point.
It ended up being totally fine.
And now it's just a cute little footnote. It was adorable.
It's such a great moment.
It was Guy Love. Yeah.
Cut 4 has a story titled Breaking Down the Hug Heard Around the World Today, in which they analyze the hug. So then we go to the 13th. The Rockies already have scored the go-ahead run on Tony Wolters' go-ahead single, by the way.
Yeah.
Of all people. Tony.
The 25th man.
One bag in this spot. So bottom of the 13th inning, Terrence Gore, who has literally one hit in his major league career, which has spanned 5 seasons, maybe 6 seasons now. Terrence Gore goes to the plate. against Scott Oberg, and there is a ball that whizzes by Terrence Gore, and I'm a little worried about this because it appears for the second time in as many games, Tony Wolters got crossed up with an elevated fastball coming
his
direction.
Not great, right?
That doesn't seem good.
Nope.
But a 96.2-mile-per-hour fastball comes up and in and just drills home plate umpire Chris Guccione in the left arm.
Yeah.
And you could hear Guccione scream the second that happened. Now, umpires are not wearing padding down the arms. And not only that, you're standing flush facing the pitcher. So you're not even in a circumstance where the ball is coming across your body. It's coming at your body. So if Chris Guccione just stood against a wall and told Scott Oberg, walk 60 feet, 6 inches away and just wing this at me as hard as you can, that's pretty much what happened. So Chris Guccione gets drilled by a pitch. And Terrence Gore, like 90 seconds later, just decides,
just go to first.
I'm going to go to first base.
That's literally what happened.
Yeah.
He got it.
He stood at the plate forever.
Stood at the plate for about 15 seconds and then just started trotting to first. And like the umpires were like, sure.
And to be fair, like that's the smart play. It would have been smarter had Terrence Gore gone immediately. If Terrence Gore would have just taken off for first base, then I don't know if the Rockies get that overturned, because you can't definitively say there wasn't an angle that showed. You remember there was that video like 10 years ago that went around the internet of an Arkansas player in an SEC game who there were angles that showed a pitch missed him by at least a foot.
Right.
And he was jumping around out of the batter's box, shaking his arm out as though he had just gotten drilled by a curveball that missed him so obviously.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't that, you know, like Terrence Gore. All it has to do is nick a part of you going by, and that's a hit by pitch. And I think if Terrence Gore tosses the bat and goes to first, there's a chance that he was initially awarded first base and it was overturned on replay. There's a chance they just let him stay at first. And if Terrence Gore is at first base, he's basically at third base.
Yep.
That moment was insane.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Oh, man. So I think it's two things. One, it's a hell of a smart play by Terrence Gore, and honestly, I think it was Joe Maddon, because they showed Joe Maddon in the dugout saying, go to first, and Terrence Gore ends up over there. But my favorite moment of all of it was Terrence Gore standing on first base watching the video board, as if he was thinking, did it hit
me? He's like, well, going to have to go back 90 feet.
I mean, he's obviously looking up there thinking, is this going to show clearly that it didn't hit me, or are we going to get away with this?
Right.
Thankfully, Chris Guccione, I'm assuming, was okay. I would imagine has had that arm wrapped in ice all day today. But it doesn't matter. The Rockies in the bottom of the 13th inning, just as we all predicted, get a striking out the side dominant performance from Scott Oberg.
He struck out all four batters he faced, by the way.
All four batters he faces via strikeout. And fans Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, and Albert Almora among those four batters to finish off the Chicago Cubs 2018 season and send the Rockies on to the National League Division Series.
I mean, Scott Oberg, like if you go back and watch that 13th inning, Scott Oberg was fire. Like,
yeah. So one thing that we haven't talked about a lot, Kyle Freeland.
Kyle Freeland? Yeah, okay.
Kyle Freeland goes out and throws 6 2/3, the only other pitcher in baseball to have thrown 20 scoreless outs in an elimination game. Madison Bumgarner, who did it twice in the 2014 and 2016 wild card games.
Yeah.
Kyle Freeland goes out pitches John Lester, lasts longer, and doesn't allow a run, and was just exactly what his team needed. 6 2/3, 4 hits, really should have been 3 hits, 6 strikeouts and 1 walk, and only had to throw 82 pitches, by the way. I don't know.
Coming on short rest, by the way.
Coming on short rest, on 3 days rest. I don't know what more you can say about Kyle Freeland that hasn't been said. Oh. I will say, there was a tweet last night from the Purple Row account, like, Kyle Freeland's good. National media needs to recognize. I think people have. There have been a series of stories from national outlets, whether it's, you know, some of the more baseball-centric ones, Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus and whoever, but, you know, even The Athletic and SI and ESPN, like, people have taken note how good Kyle Freeland is, and this was his coming out party.
Yeah, I think the beauty of maybe the death of print media is that there's so many people doing great work regionally that can be retweeted and pushed to a national level. And that's why I think that when, and especially with Sarametrics too, when someone puts, when Kyle Freeland puts up numbers like he has this year, especially playing, pitching at a place like Coors Field most of the season, the numbers he's put up there, that helps. I think that if you're a baseball fan, you know how good Kyle Freeland is.
Yeah.
And that's something that even in 2010, Ubaldo had an incredible season and he had a great first half. And, you know, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated with a couple of other guys. Like, I don't think people really, really understood how great Ubaldo was that year.
Yeah.
I think they know what Kyle Freeland has done this season. Even Mike Petriello, who, you know, we've had on here, we've fallen in and out of love with Mike Petriello on this podcast over the years. Even last night, like, he's, this season, he has even been on record being like, I don't like Freeland as much as other people because he doesn't miss enough bats.
Yeah.
He's, and whatever, that's missing bats, strikeouts are a big, big sabermetric thing. And it's understandable because if the guy's not making contact, then he's not going to be hitting a home run. It gives you a better chance at being better. And that's the point. And I totally get that.
Yeah.
Even last night on the ESPN2 broadcast, Mike Petriello said, I was completely wrong about Kyle Freeland. He really is that dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, and
it was cool to see.
And listen, like, not every capital D dude has to be Walker Buehler throwing 99 with like wicked breaking stuff, or even Germán Márquez. Germán Márquez like has capital D dude kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No one, you don't have to be that guy to be like one of the best pitchers in baseball. What we saw last night was like that movie Boyhood.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, you know, where you're a child. It's the same story with different people falling, like a child, then like a teenager, and then and like an adult, and then whatever. Like, John Lester is like the adult, and then Kyle Freeland is like him at 24.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, they're very similar people. They throw cutters and sinkers and, you know, breaking stuff, and they don't seem like they're gonna screw you up. But all of a sudden, like I said last night, by the way, John Lester doesn't scare you. And then you look in the seventh inning and you have one run and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
By the way, last night, the Rockies scored one run in the first inning against John Lester, looked up in the seventh inning and they had one run. I will say that. Kyle Freeland may not scare you and that's okay. But he's got great stuff. He's improved himself immensely over the last year. He doesn't allow hard contact. He can strike you out. We saw him last night. He was about 2 to 2.5 miles more on average with his fastball velocity than he was throughout the rest of the season. He was amped up last night.
Yeah.
And you could tell. And some guys, if they get amped up, they don't know what they're doing. And they get out of their own
that
comfort
is the
zone
difference.
And they get hit. And they're like,
exactly.
What the hell? Kyle Freeland
That's
got amped up and he was better.
Yeah.
Kyle Freeland is that guy. Kyle Freeland is a dude. And that's, and the Rockies haven't had a lot of dudes in their life, especially pitchers. But Kyle Freeland, he showed last night that this season isn't a fluke. This season isn't something that's going to be washed away into history. That game showed that Kyle Freeland can be the guy for the Rockies on the biggest stage, and it's not going to faze him. You're on 3 days rest for the first time in your career, and you're going on the road at one of the most hostile and historic environments in the history of baseball, and you go out against one of the greatest postseason pitchers of our generation, and you outpitch him, you toss 6 2/3 scoreless innings. I'm sorry, that was the greatest pitching performance in Rockies history. The Ubaldo no-hitter was awesome. It was also a mid-April game in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Based on where he was, the venue, and the moment, that was the greatest pitching performance the Rockies have ever had.
Yep. I completely agree with that. And we've had all of this discussion about who is and who is not an ace. I think you discovered your ace.
You did.
And the fact that you may have
aces
two
don't have to throw 98, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Yeah.
John Lester's been an ace his entire career. He hasn't touched 98 once.
Yeah. I just don't – I don't have words to explain how cool it is, Kyle Freeland being the guy to step up in that moment, being the guy to get the job done, and being the guy who – you know, and I tweeted last night, I don't think I've ever seen a pitcher exude confidence wearing a Rockies uniform like Kyle Freeland does. And let me put it this way. Kyle Freeland, when he's on the mound, looks the way every other team's best pitcher looks. And rarely have I ever felt that way with a Rockies pitcher.
Yeah.
With a Rockies pitcher, you're always just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And the Rockies have had some really good pitchers throughout franchise history. But with, you know, Jeff Francis gets the ball in game one of the World Series in 2007. And Jeff Francis, talk about somebody who doesn't scare you. And I always loved Jeff Francis, but Jeff Francis couldn't break glass with his fastball. And if the breaking stuff wasn't on, it was going to be a long day.
Yeah.
And the Rockies were down, I think it was something like 900-0 in the second inning in that game.
Yeah.
And went on to get swept in the World Series. Like, the Rockies have never had just a dude. And obviously, we have long pulled for John Gray to be that guy. It doesn't look like John Gray is going to be that guy.
Ubaldo was close. Ubaldo was must-see TV close. For a while. Yes. Yeah.
But the Rockies right now, like, this could not be a cooler story. And it's, you know, there's a thread. I'm not a Redditor, and I don't go to Reddit for anything. But my best friend from college is a Reddit guy, and often sends me.
I've never been a Reddit guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never gotten into it. But I will say that the Reddit baseball, that channel, whatever the forum,
I'm just so shocked that Reddit Broncos that follow us is like great and normal.
I figured
Reddit Broncos would be worst of the worst. Reddit Broncos is outstanding. Yeah,
so good. Yeah. But they have a thread called the Serious Next Day thread, in which you talk about baseball the day after, and and it even says, like, this is a thread in which you have to discuss things seriously. Quote: jokes, memes, and other low effort comments will be removed. What was cool was the thread talking about Kyle Freeland and all the people from other teams who chimed in and said, like, this is an Astros fan who said, quote, imagine pitching the biggest game of your career so far for the team you grew up rooting for. That's the fucking dream. I really hope the Rockies can keep him in Denver for his whole career. And that's like all over it, you know, like the amount of people who just see this. There's a Cubs fan who says kids should be a Rocky for life. You know, like,
his parents had season tickets in 1993, you know,
they have a,
like,
picture of him in a onesie that says extra, extra small. And
come
it's got the Rockies logo.
Come on.
How cute is that? I just, like, man, it's unbelievable. And the Rockies have never had a hometown story like that. You know, I mean, the Rockies had Sean Chacon. That was about as close as they got. But this is something entirely different, and it's incredible. Just to pause for a moment. If we could go back to 1995.
Okay.
And you told me that one day I would interact with Cato Kalin on the internet.
That's a loaded sentence in any way.
I don't know.
Because the internet was still, like, Al Gore had just invented it.
Yeah, like, it was still mailed to your house on a disc.
No, you could pick up like an hour of internet at Burger King.
If you would have told me one day you and Cato Kalin will interact, I don't think my puny 10-year-old brain would have been able to process that.
I think at that point, I'd have been like, oh boy, what did I do to get in jail?
Yeah, exactly. What am I doing in prison at this? Cato Kalin and I just exchanged tweets. Cato Kalin was up in the PDP mentions earlier. Noted Brewers fan, Cato Kalin. And honestly, I'm a little bummed this didn't happen yesterday, because my follow-up message would have been, do you want to come on our Rockies podcast? And then we could have had PDP episode 100, whatever the hell.
Cato Kalin. Oh,
go look it up, Adam Busack. Go look it up, Cameron Goldner.
Yeah.
Big name in the 90s.
You youths. Yeah.
You punks. You punk kids weren't even born when the murders happened. How dare you?
How dare you not know the guy who aided and abetted, or at least was there, when OJ murdered all those people?
Oh, my Lord.
How dare you not know who those people are?
So anyway, Cato Kalin and I are boys now.
That's so anyway... You know,
because I tweeted and said, Cato Kalin and the PDP menchies, mommy, we made it. And Cato Kalin responded, go Brewers.
But by the way, Cato Kalin is a huge Brewers fan, which is like the weirdest thing about Cato Kalin, I think.
Apparently he's from Milwaukee.
That's fine. But, like, you know, of all the things about Cato Kalin, the fact that he's a big Brewers fan is probably the most surprising.
Cato Kalin, by the way, his Twitter bio is former house guest, former house guest, current adult, but now living behind my own house. That is one hell of a delicate tap dance around a double homicide.
Around the fact that you literally were there for a double murder.
Like, I don't know if I'd lead with that. I don't know if that's the first thing I'd lead with. He's 59 years old, by the way.
That's
Cato Kalin could easily be my father. Easily.
Is he?
Maybe.
Is he your dad?
Maybe I should message him.
Boy, you guys should reconnect again.
Okay, so Kyle Freeland defies description. And I've got a feeling that we're going to have to record a lot more episodes because this is the first time that the Rockies have advanced to the division series in the PDP era.
It's been 8 years, folks. So, or not 9 years. Sorry, 9 years.
I don't know if we're going to do daily. I don't know if we're going to do after the first two games in Milwaukee, but we'll be with you more. But as it stacks up right now, the Rockies are going to go with Antonio Senzatella in game one, and they're going to go with Tyler Anderson in game two in Milwaukee. And then it is quite possible that the Rockies throw out Kyle Freeland for the first playoff game in 9 years at Coors Field. In game three. Game three would be Sunday. That would be normal rest for Kyle Freeland. It would bump Erman Marquez back to an extra couple days of rest. Maybe that's not the way the Rockies go, because then you'd be throwing left-handers in back-to-back games. If you throw Anderson in game two, maybe you go back to Marquez to throw a right-hander in game three. It would keep the order of the rotation the same. That would seem to be the more logical explanation. But if the Rockies somehow steal both games in Milwaukee, and there is the chance that they could come home to a sold-out Coors Field for the first game at that stadium in the playoffs in 9 years, and they could start Kyle Freeland on the mound, I don't know if I will ever have been in as electric an atmosphere as what that's going to be on Sunday.
And it's so perfect. He's going to be on normal rest. Even if they're down 0-2, I think you have to start Kyle Freeland in that game no matter what.
Yeah.
I know Herman Marquez. He's your best. It'll be his turn. He'll have more rest than Kyle at that point.
Yeah.
I think Kyle Freeland starts that game no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. It's going to be fun. However it plays out, it's going to be fun. A couple of other notes. This is the first time since 2010 that neither the Chicago Cubs nor the St. Louis Cardinals will be in the National League Championship Series, so that's awesome. The Rockies will start Antonio Senzatella in Game 1, and the Rockies made that announcement today. The Milwaukee Brewers have not announced a starter.
They're going to the bullpen game.
They're
going to
go
one.
With an opener. Yeah. That's what Craig Council's already said. He hasn't said who it's going to be. And
let's
then
get weird,
game,
man. Yeah.
In game two, they're starting Yolish Chacin.
Arguably one of the top five pitchers in Rockies history.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And a guy who was unceremoniously released because, from everything we heard, had a crap attitude toward the end of his time with the Colorado Rockies.
Did not like Dan O'Dowd. Join the club, Jolies.
Chacin, who was actually released by Breidich after the
oddly enough,
Breidich's very first moves, very first big moves in spring training of 2015, landed with the Arizona Diamondbacks that year. He was with the Atlanta Braves in 2016, along with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, San Diego Padres last year, and this season, 35 starts for the Milwaukee Brewers. A 15-8 record, a 3.50 ERA. He struck out 156 batters and 192 and two-thirds innings. He's also walked 71, which is somewhat Senzatella-ish. Not Senzatella-ish.
Chacin-ish.
Well, I guess Senzatella worries me in that I don't know which. I would be much more confident in Tyler Anderson tomorrow, because Tyler Anderson, I feel like, has better stuff to fall back on if the stuff is not there. Antonio Senzatella, if the stuff is not there and he's not commanding, and the reason why I say that's relatively Antonio Senzatella-ish is we've seen games in which all of a sudden It's just, ugh.
Well, in his last five starts, or last six starts, excuse me, he's got a 2.94 ERA, struck out 27 batters in 33 and two-thirds innings. He's allowed five homers in that time because Antonio Sensatella, we've said it many times on this podcast that the best thing about Antonio Sensatella is that he's got the rocks to make up.
Those big stones.
Got a couple of big stones to make a start like this. That is where he is at his best, and that's why he is a guy to be able to start this the first game of the series. It sucks the Rockies have been playing so many important games over the last week or so that they couldn't set their rotation for the division series. And that's too bad, because that's the reason why they're starting their fourth or fifth starter, really? Fifth starter, really? In game one of the DS. Because, you know, Marquez can't go, Freeland can't go. They've already done. And I think this says a lot about where they think John Gray is. And that's a shame. Right. We've been staunch John Gray defenders for a long time. And
no secret.
That's no secret. But, you know, I think what we've seen lately from John Gray, save for that one start he had against San Francisco.
And the one against Philly.
It was the one against Philly. Sorry, that was the one that I meant. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not there for John Gray right now. And it's a stuff thing. It's a mental thing. It's whatever it is. The fact that he doesn't get the ball for game one in their first division series since 2009, when he has been tabbed as the guy for...
He was your opening day starter. He was last year's wild card game starter.
Since he was drafted. I mean, he was drafted as a soon-to-be-ready prospect, a high-riser, who is going to be the ace of this team for years to come. And he has shown flashes of that many times in his career. And he's also shown flashes of not rising to the moment.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that we're here talking about in this way.
It does.
But this team does not believe in John Gray right now.
And, you know, they haven't been given reason to. Because the moment against the Phillies is the exception and not the rule.
Right.
And that's what really sucks.
Lately.
Yes. Lately, yeah. You know, John Gray, his rookie season statistically was one of the best seasons for any pitcher in Rockies history. John Gray put together some really, really impressive stuff for long stretches of time in a Rockies uniform. But it just hasn't been there in the biggest moments. And best of five series, you can't afford to get behind the eight ball. I was wondering if the Rockies were going to go to him in game two, because I think in a circumstance where he's on the road and maybe you steal game one.
Yeah.
The pressure is so different in a game two scenario, especially if the worst possible situation is you're going home split at 1-1. I have confidence in John Gray's ability to bounce back because of what he did in that start against the Phillies, because of other starts we've seen throughout even just this season in which he stepped up in moments where they've needed him to step up. The other interesting component of it is this. Well, it's really twofold. Number one, I'm not sure he makes the division series roster.
He might not. He didn't make the roster last night. Yeah.
And if that's the case, I wonder if we've seen the end of John Gray's time in a Rockies uniform. One of our most respected, I would call him the most respected member of Rockies Twitter, Chris Christman, whose opinion I take more seriously than anybody's, especially more seriously than yours.
Oh, God, yeah.
Chris tweeted after that game against the Nationals, I have a feeling that's the last start that we see John Gray in a Rockies uniform, and he would be best served to go elsewhere. And, you know, to be honest, I don't think that's inaccurate. I would be bummed about that, because John Gray is an awesome dude.
And he'll go somewhere else and be very good, I think.
That's the scary thing. Imagine putting John Gray in San Diego.
Well, no, you know? He couldn't face the Padres then, so...
Well, that's true. That's a fair point.
I mean, look at John Gray's last five starts. So it's all in September, all big games. The Rockies needed every single one of them. September 7th against the Dodgers at home. Four innings, two runs, five walks. They lost that game 4-2. September 12th against the Diamondbacks. Still in the race at that point. Four innings, four runs. At Los Angeles, September 17th. Two innings, six runs, seven hits. Then against the Phillies, a Phillies team who had totally given up at that point, He dominated. He was great. Seven innings, one run, seven strikeouts. Best we've seen him in a long time. Nationals. Last Saturday of the regular season. Rockies, if they win, they've got a great chance of clinching the division either that day if the Dodgers lost or the next day if they could win out. Two innings, five runs, seven hits.
That's the moment you wonder if that broke John Gray.
I mean, that's four of five starts against teams that are in a playoff race, that those games that the Rockies needed, and they needed John Gray to be good John Gray.
Yeah.
And he was not.
Did not happen. Now, here's the off-the-wall idea that I have.
Galaxy Brain? I'm in.
John, yeah. Galaxy Brain. Let's go Galaxy Brain for a second. Let's talk some game theory. If John Gray makes the roster, what if you put John Gray in the bullpen and say, dude, go take your frustration out in short bursts? John Gray touched 103 miles per hour in college. If you put that arsenal in the bullpen and you compress the duration for which he is needed down, everything plays up. And if you say, we need you to get three outs, that's all you need. That's the only pressure is you get three outs. John Gray, I think John Gray has the potential to be Archie Bradley. I think John Gray could be lethal in the bullpen.
And it's not something you wanted to take lightly.
No.
Like,
no.
He could do it. Like, whenever John Gray struggles, he says that he goes and has a bullpen where he doesn't think about anything, and all of a sudden he's back to being good John Gray again.
Right.
And if it's just for the next couple of weeks, hopefully, that John Gray is a reliever, I think you take that bet. I think you do that. And that's, I think he can be that guy with the stuff that he has to be a high leverage, dominant, strike him out reliever.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you put him in that bullpen, and have we seen that? No, we haven't. But do I have more faith in John Gray's stuff than I do in, you know, maybe in somebody like a DJ Johnson?
DJ Johnson's
been very good.
Right, yeah.
But DJ Johnson is a pitcher who was in independent ball 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
Is DJ Johnson a guy that you want to rely on? It was a September call-up. I mean, DJ Johnson is not somebody who forced his way onto the Major League roster in May and has pitched himself into a bullpen spot. Like, nothing is given. And the fact that he was warming up last night even caught me by surprise.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I get that it's right-handed, left-handed, but I trust John Gray more than I trust Harrison Musgrave.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so,
I don't know.
That's, if Bud Black knows that John Gray wouldn't be a good reliever, then he knows that already.
Yeah, that's true.
If Bud Black knows that John Gray doesn't have what it takes to be a reliever, then he's not going to force it now.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll be very interested to see how this goes, because I think if John doesn't make the postseason roster, there's a very good chance we see him shipped out over the offseason, which, you know, we're bummed about. We've always been big John Gray fans.
That would be a huge bummer.
Yeah. So... neither here nor there, but it was a conversation that we had to have, because as of right now, this rotation looks to be Senzatella, Anderson, and then either Freeland Marquez or Marquez Freeland.
Oh, you can't not start Freeland in that game in Denver. I'm sorry. He'll be on normal rest. Like, I don't care if you're down 0-2. I think Freeland starts that game no matter what. He has to. It's his game he's always dreamed of.
Yeah.
A playoff game, a Denver kid in a playoff game. In his hometown, you know, could be down 0-2, could be up 2-0. We don't know, you know, like it's, and then if there's going to be a game four, then you have the better pitching matchup in game four with Herman Marquez.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't matter what that series is at that point. If it goes to game four, who's up 2-1 or not, you got Herman Marquez and you got a great chance to win that game.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, they made it. They made it, man. Like,
they sure did.
It's Wednesday and we're still talking Rockies baseball in an active context.
So anyway, the Boise Hawks had a great season. Yeah.
Here's the thing about the Grand Junction Rockies, folks. The reason the Rockies don't field an Arizona League affiliate. So old friend Yolish Chacin will go on Friday in game two for the Brewers. And then we'll see how everything goes to follow that. The Milwaukee Brewers finished with the best record in the National League. The Rockies matchups with the Milwaukee Brewers this year. kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, they were in a lot of those games. Should have won a lot of those games.
When the Rockies bullpen was at its absolute worst, it was in Milwaukee. The Rockies dropped three out of four, in which Wade Davis was awful. Dropped two out of three. They dropped three out of four to the Brewers at home. They dropped two out of three on the road in that series in which Wade Davis was awful. Coughed up the walk-off home run to Eric Thames, who I don't know why he ever wears a shirt. If it wasn't the rule book, why would Eric Thames ever put a shirt
on? He's J.R. Smith,
Yeah, exactly. Rockies dropped three out of four to the Brewers at home. That was back in May, including an 11-10 loss to the Brewers on May 11th, a game in which the Rockies at one time led 9-3 and lost 11-10. The Rockies this season have not played the Brewers well, dropping 5 out of 7. But when you watch those games, there were some fluky outcomes. And I think you don't blow the 11-10, and not at the risk of being Drew Goodman, you don't blow the 11-10 game, then all of a sudden it's a 3-4 season series. Wade Davis pitches better, then maybe it's a 5-2 season series. Yeah, those things didn't happen.
Wade Davis
so we're not
had
gonna talk about them.
He had two of his six blown saves against the Brewers this year. Let's just
back-to-back days, right?
No, one was the 11-10 game. The other was Thames homer. Yeah.
Right, right. The Thames homer.
Thank God I was in Europe at that point. I did not live through that live.
I'm trying to remember.
The only game I lived through live in that series was the Sunday game, the day game, when Ottavino blew it in the ninth.
And then
Nolan homered in the 11th.
Nolan ended up, rallying them with the homer in the 11th, and they won that game. And Scott Ober.
I was in Hanya, Greece at that point.
Scott Ober continued his brilliant campaign of undefeated dominance.
Yes, exactly.
So that's what it was. It was Otto. You can do it, Otto. You can do it, Otto. So it was not a fun season series, but I think the Rockies match up well with the Brewers. I think the Brewers' offense is terrifying. You have to be able to handle the guys who are not Christian Yelich. Christian Yelich is probably going to burn you at some point.
Yes.
That's just a fact of the matter. Christian Yelich is an MVP player who will win the National League MVP this year. He is a fantastic baseball player. Can you imagine an outfield with, like, let's say, Christian Yelich, Marcell Ozuna, and Giancarlo Stanton? Could you imagine a team having, like, those three guys in the outfield all at the same time?
No. I could never possibly imagine those three players would be on the same team in the same outfield at the same time ever. That's ridiculous.
And if you had that, like, you'd have to be insane to trade all three of those guys away.
Well, it depends. Are they old?
No. They're all young.
Are they all expensive? I mean,
is at least
two of those guys not expensive?
Yeah, two are. One of them, let's say, has a huge contract. Maybe you got to get rid of that guy. But two of them, very affordable.
That's super interesting. No, I can't imagine that at all. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Neither could Derek Jeter. But you have to be able to handle Jesus Aguilar. You have to be able to handle Ryan Braun.
Yeah, Braun's one of the hottest hitters in baseball right now, which is too bad because that guy sucks.
The guys who are around Christian Yelich are the guys who you have to limit. Eric Thames cannot beat you. Orlando Arcia cannot beat you. Those guys have to be kept off the base paths. Lorenzo Cain is going to do his damage. Jesus Aguilar at some point is probably going to do some damage. Christian Yelich scares you, but you can't let the other dudes be the ones to win this series for the Brewers. Yeah. That's where I think the Rockies run into problems in 2018. When you give up a walk and an RBI single to Walker Buehler in a division tiebreaker game, when opposing pitchers bat, I think the number is 798 against your pitching staff.
Orlando Arcia, he basically beat the Cubs in that wildcard tiebreaker game. Like, he had a four hit game. Like, they were not expecting Orlando Arcia to be that guy, and he beat them.
Yep.
The Brewers are a very good team. They are a very strong team. They've got great experience in the postseason with the guys they brought in, with guys like Lorenzo Cain, Mike Moustakas, even Jonathan Scope. They've got guys, and they've got a hell of a bullpen. with Hader and Jeffress and Knable, those guys can get anybody out and they can really, really shorten games.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing. You can't let the Brewers get even to the sixth inning with a lead.
No. No, and that's they're going to win that game for the most part.
Yeah.
That's
then they turn terrifying.
They're that good.
Yeah. Man. But this is the thing. We're closing in on an hour and a half episode. It's Wednesday, and we're talking about a game the Rockies are going to play tomorrow.
Wednesday, October 3rd. Yeah.
That's the best thing. You know, like, they have at least three more games in this baseball season. They have as many as 11 more wins on the docket this year. I will say, I leave the country October 17th for 2 weeks. If the Rockies win the first World Series in franchise history when I'm in fucking Colombia, man, I swear I'll be alone watching the World Series. I swear to you, I will be sobbing in front of strangers in Barranquilla or Cartagena, Colombia, like a crazy person. But it'd be worth it.
I'll take it.
I mean, it'd be worth it. So, yeah, I mean, I think we covered just about everything.
I think so.
And people have been beating down the doors for this episode all day.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Like six texts. Yeah. Sorry, everybody, that our free podcast wasn't on time for you.
We have a potential fun thing going on tomorrow.
We do on, have a potential fun thing going on
Twitter.
I mean, I think we can announce it because we're going to do it.
And yeah, no one's going to listen to this like right this second. Yeah.
Right. Playoff t-shirts. The very first Purple Dinosaur Podcast playoff t-shirts will be on sale. And for the first time in the history of the PDP t-shirt empire, we're going to have you vote as to which t-shirt you want. There will be two options. We'll put the poll out there, and you can vote and let us know which one you want.
It's gonna be fun. I hope you like them both.
Oh man, we're making playoff t-shirts. They're playing baseball games in the playoffs. It's gonna be great.
I'm excited.
It's gonna be great, man.
I'm excited.
I am pumped. So I guess that'll do it.
I think we did all right. Yeah.
I think we did okay.
We'll be talking to you again, though, for sure.
Apparently, the Yankees are already up 2-0.
Aaron Judge hit a big home run.
He's good.
He's all right. Good. Yeah.
At baseball. So I guess we'll get out of here. That seems like it.
Nope. Well, all right.
Okay. Okay.
They're still playing baseball.
They're still playing baseball, and we'll be back with you. We still have to figure out our schedules. Some personal news. I will be the TV play-by-play man for University of Denver hockey this season.
Woo!
And we've got our first broadcast. This week is only a stream. Saturday night, we've got our first broadcast. DU will take on the University of Alberta in an exhibition game. That'll be on DenverPioneers.com. And thankfully, it comes on the off day for this Rockies Brewer series. But all that to say, like, our schedules are insane. Anthony's schedule obviously gets nuts with FS1 and Fox with the postseason. My schedule now going into now hockey and basketball season and having four feature stories due this month for MILB. Things will be crazy, but we will figure out some time. Even if it's a half-hour podcast, we will get you a podcast. We will talk playoff baseball, real playoff baseball
with a series and everything.
In the history of this little fight in Colorado Rockies podcast that could. And yeah, that's it. For Anthony Masterson and Cato Kalen, my name is Tyler Maughan. And we'll talk to you later this week. Go Rocks!
Love you! Bye!
Bye!
What are we going to talk about?
I don't know. Probably nothing going on. Not really much. much.
You want to talk about the Boise Hawks?
Yeah. Either them or Grand Junction.
Cool.
I guess.
You know, do it.
It's October 3rd. Might as well.
Might as well just fuck around.
Yeah, you know. You know, might as well.
My dog is just staring at me like I did something wrong.
She hates you. She hates you.
She might.
My dog. My dog.
I've been so nice to you.
When I stop petting her.
And yeah.
She paws at me like, hey.
Okay. Come on. Yeah, keep
let's
going.
Let's do this. Let's do this, man. Yeah,
let's do it.
All right. Let's just fucking go.
Let's just fucking go.